The hope, done sensibly, is that the incentives for investment and economic growth will bring in enough growth and therefore tax revenue.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Welcome to Wednesday afternoon, everyone. Steve Bertrand in the Skyline Studio, high above the Chicago River on Wacker Drive in the wonderful and beautiful city of Chicago. You heard Terry Savage's voice there. We'll check in with her in just a second. Also, a little bit later in the program, Seamus Toomey will be here. Seamus comes by from time to time. He's the editor-in-chief of Block Club Chicago. It's they kind of have replaced DNA Info, a great neighborhood source for news. They've got a great story in there about the demand for yeast. You know, there's so many more breweries, local breweries around, that there's a company in Chicago that started, I think, at 2015, not too long ago, and they're meeting this demand. They have to keep growing because more and more breweries want more and more yeast. On a phone line now is Terry Savage. Terry, thanks for joining us today. I know you're busy with a bunch of meetings, right?
Well, I'm over at CME. We have some board meetings. I was laughing at your story about yeast. Do you think yeast could make the market rise?
You know what? I would really pick on you for making that pun, but I kind of already made one earlier. So I think.
Oh, okay.
Kind of...
Great minds in the same direction.
Yeah, and some mediocre minds too. So here's. I just want to tell a quick story, and I think you'll be interested in this. Steve Brine, who is a conservative member of Parliament, he represents Winchester, was one of the MPs yesterday who thwarted Boris Johnson, who voted against him. I think there were 21 in all. One of them was Winston Churchill's grandfather. To take control of the Brexit debate away from Boris Johnson and give it to Parliament as a whole. And then Brine was essentially kicked out of the Conservative Party yesterday. I had no idea they could do that. The Prime Minister can kick him out of the party and then prevent him from running in the next election as a Conservative.
Well, it depends on whether he wants to run as a conservative. Compare that to our system.
No, it doesn't depend. Even if he wants to, the party now is prohibited from letting him do it.
But at least in their system, people with a conscience stood up for the reasons of their own, which we can discuss about Brexit. In our system, very few people with conscience have stood up, except about five now in Texas who have said they won't run again. So it's very interesting. We look at their system as strange. I'm sure they look at ours as strange. But at least there, they've had people stand up and say, wait a minute, you're going to do Brexit without a deal. It's going to throw the economy into chaos. We need things in agreement, like being able to cross the borders, you know, having trucks not have to stop and be inspected, and all the kinds of things that the European Union brought to develop trade. Maybe it's not the currencies, maybe it's not other policies like immigration, but we got to have some kind of deal, these people said. And they at least had the courage to stand up to their leader when it was a clear issue.
Well,
we haven't really had that here.
I look forward to talking to him soon. You know, obviously he hasn't responded to me yet. I think he's got better things to do. But it could cost him his political career. I know him well enough to know he's certainly not going to run as a Labour Party candidate. So we'll see what happens.
But there could be a third party.
There could be. We'll see. Or maybe they'll rescind it after a time. I don't know. Okay, so while we're in Europe, explain for me, and let's do this sort of as a Terry Savage 101, because you've talked about negative interest rates before and how they are becoming more and more common in Europe. Alan Greenspan was on CNN today, or CNBC today, saying that it's only a matter of time before negative rates spread to the U.S. So explain for me what that is exactly and what it would mean for us.
Well, there's $15 trillion of central bank and corporate debt in Europe that carries a negative interest rate. It means people are so scared about the future value of their money that they would rather give it to the government and get back less in the future. They're not worried about inflation. They're just worried about where to put their money. And so they're putting it somewhere to keep it safe and paying for this. It's like paying a fee to put your cash in a bank vault.
So
literally.
Is this money that people would take out of the stock market because of the risk and buy bonds?
People who there is no yield. There are very few. Only the riskiest of bonds in Europe pay anything. That's why the dollar is so strong, because they're not only taking money out of the stock and bond markets there and wanting to put it somewhere safe. A lot of them are willing to pay a premium to exchange their currencies for the dollar, where you can get 1.5% for 10 years on U.S. Treasuries.
Okay, so
it's what keeping our currency strong, much to the president's dismay.
Let's say negative interest rates come to the U.S.? What does that?
Well, let's back up for a second. I know for a fact, because I raised that question, must be 3 years ago, at a dinner meeting I was invited to, of Jay Powell. That was before he was Fed chairman. I mean, I remember the withering look and answer he gave me when I said, at the time when interest rates were going negative in Europe, was an unbelievable concept to me. That, you know, here we spend money running around trying to find the highest interest rates for our CDs, and they're not very high. But there, they're willing to put money in places that they have to pay for safety. And I said to him, could that come to the U.S.? Because our T-bill interest rates for 3 months were at 0.05% when I asked this question. And he stared me down and said witheringly, no, you will not see negative interest rates in the United States. Now, the Fed is pretty powerful. The markets are probably more powerful than the Fed. But there would have to be such a global economic collapse for money to rush to the U.S., pushing interest rates down, that I'll tell you something. I hope we're on. I just can't imagine that the Fed's going to let that happen.
So you're on team.
But if there's a tsunami of money coming into the United States saying the dollar's safer than the yen or the euro or sterling or China, people all around the world go, we've got to get our money into the U.S., then we would see an unbelievably soaring stock market. They'd pay to buy dollars and buy stocks. It could spread over to real estate, farmland. It would really be an amazing thing. Or money buying U.S. treasuries and pushing yields down to below zero.
Terry, I'm 56 and a half, which means in 5.5 years I can start collecting my Social Security. I've been working for it my whole life.
No. I'm going to chain you to your microphone there. You may not collect Social Security until you reach full retirement age, which is going to be at least 66 and a half, I would guess, by the time you reach that time.
Okay, make your arguments, because I get your arguments, but I think I have one that might counter it. So go for it, expert.
Look, there are two reasons. All right, this is a very difficult argument to win on the emotions. So I'm going to hit you with the emotional argument first and then the financial argument, which really nails the point. The emotional argument, people say, is, I mean, it's just such a tempting pool of money. And just what you said, I've worked all my life. I deserve it. I'm going to get it now. I may even keep working. The other emotional argument is I want to get it before it runs out. Let me just demolish that first, because, you know, we are a huge, powerful group, baby boomers, and believe me, we're a very important voting block. They will adjust Social Security. Wealthier seniors might be taxed on their Social Security even more than they are now. And younger people will probably have to contribute more, and the retirement age will be raised. But they will not stop paying Social Security 2035 when the trust fund quote runs out. If they have to, they'll print the money. That's inflation.
They've been talking about this for 30 years, and I've always said that Social Security is not going to go away.
It may not mean very much to you at that point, and if you're successful and have other retirement funds. But here's the argument for not taking Social Security early. Unless, of course, you're destitute. There are a lot of people. You know, 32% of all current Social Security beneficiaries, the ones receiving it now, have taken their money before their full retirement age, which is a little over 66 for those turning this year. Now, if you delay, if you take it early, it's like costing yourself an 8% annual return, 8% a year, for every year that you take it before your full retirement age.
Okay, I get that.
You can't put your money in the bank today. We're talking about zero interest rates. You can't get 8%. Plus, one more point, that's the base on which any future inflation adjustments, cost of living adjustments will be made. So you're permanently putting yourself at a disadvantage. And then when inflation does come back, you'll get a lower cost of living adjustment.
We're writing about a column that Terry wrote at terrysavage.com. And, you know, those things I've heard. What jumped out at me, Terry, though, was that if you do take it and then you keep working, that you might be penalized. I've never heard that before.
Yeah, oh, sure. Oh, didn't you know that? Yes, there's a penalty. If you keep working when you have Social Security, and if you earn over $1,470 a month this year, but call it $1,500, that you use a penalty of $2 of Social Security for every dollar you earn over that limit. So the silliest mistake is to say, I'm going to take it at 62 or 63. I need it right now. And then realize that's not enough and then go back to work. At that point, you absolutely are messing yourself up because not only are you getting a lower benefit, but you're also getting taxed on the money you earn or taking away your benefits.
Okay.
Look, here's something to remember. Don't take Social Security before you get to full retirement age. Just don't do it unless you have, God forbid, a terminal illness, or you're thinking that, you know, you just have a very short life expectancy, or you desperately need it, you don't have a job, you don't have retirement savings. Take money out of your IRA and pay the taxes to bridge those years till you can lock in the higher benefit at full retirement age. And if you don't need it, wait till 70. You'll definitely get a bigger check.
So 30 seconds. I get all of that, and that makes dollars and cents perfect sense. But what about a quality of life issue where you just don't want to work anymore and it's worth that trade-off?
It's not going to be in the long run because, you know, I had this fight with my brother. I mentioned it in the column. That's exactly what he said to me. If someone says that to you, there's just no way you can win. But in the column on terrysavage.com, there's a website, maximizemysocialsecurity.com. For $40, you can do the calculations. And you can find out for yourself exactly what the financial impact of taking your Social Security check early. SocialSecurity.gov, you can use a couple of their calculators to try and figure it out. But Lawrence Kotlikoff, who's written the book on Social Security, has this great website, MaximizeMySocialSecurity.com. I can't argue with your emotional reason that you deserve it. I'm just saying that, number one, it's not going to be enough anyway. You might as well maximize it. And number two, anybody who's listening who's younger, or who has children who are younger, please tell them to take a look at all that FICA that's taken out of your paycheck every year and make sure you put money away in your own IRA, because by the time you guys get there, Steve, you and I and all of us will have sucked up most of the good deal.
All right, so get started at terrysavage.com, and you can find the links to the other spots there. Terry, nice to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Ryan Burrow. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. We are sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. Seamus Toomey's in the studio. He's the editor-in-chief of Block Club Chicago. And it's a great site, a great way to keep up to date with the neighborhoods, not just the downtown news and all of that, but you'll see what's going on in a particular neighborhood or another, in something you probably didn't know you were interested in until you read it. How'd I do, Seamus?
I couldn't have done it better myself. That's exactly. We're looking for fun stories, interesting stories, that stuff that you haven't heard of.
And the story about yeast, is it Omega Yeast in Chicago? I don't buy Omega Yeast at the grocery store, right?
No, this is
strictly for breweries.
Exactly. It's industry.
A great story about the yeast company. I think they started in 2015 or so to sort of service all the microbreweries, not just in Chicago, but around the state and elsewhere.
Right. It's a gentleman by the name of Lance Shaner came to this realization where he was talking to brewer friends, and he said, where do you buy your yeast? And it was all from out of state. And this guy has a great backstory, including in biology. And he said, well, why are you buying from out of state? Why don't I open up shop? And so he started Omega Yeast, and, you know, he hit it at the right moment when Chicago didn't have that many craft breweries 5 years ago. Now we've got, you know, almost 200.
Well, wait, you say a great backstory. He was a patent attorney who also had a doctorate in microbiology, specializing in yeast biology.
Exactly. I mean, this guy's got a lot going on.
This guy's destiny, right? I mean, there's only going to be a matter of time.
Who else could start a yeast company but a doctor in yeast biology who could also do is probably the legal work for the company.
So he's talking to his buddies. Buddy's going to open up a brewery, and where do you get your yeast? They have to go out west or out east. Only other two other places, right?
That's right.
In the country. And so he decides to open up in a Halloween shop, I think, off Montrose and the Kennedy.
Exactly. In Portage Park, it's right near where the Kennedy Junction is.
Right. And so they started, what, 2015?
2013.
13, okay. And then business, what, just took off? Or where are they now?
It's just been booming. They're just down the block at 4739 West Montrose, so pretty close. but it's booming so much they're buying up the neighborhood now, and they knocked down a bunch of buildings around them.
Wow.
And they broke ground just last week on a production plant that's going to more than double the size of what they're doing. And it sounds like even that probably won't be enough in a few years.
And so, you know, that's what I like, because we talk about startups and tech companies and all of that. Here's a guy who saw a need. For just because of the changing way we live, and is really exploiting it. So there's a Norwegian sort of yeast that they specialize in, and I know that Norwegian is one of the many languages you speak, so I'll just leave it to you to pronounce it.
It's pronounced quike. Quike.
Quike.
And all right, so I've never heard of quike
until
a couple weeks ago, when a friend of mine emailed me a link to something called Quike Fest that's coming up. It's Burnt City Brewery.
In Chicago?
In Chicago.
Okay.
It's this weekend. Omega Yeast is a co-sponsor of it, and it's literally a festival celebrating this particular yeast.
And they use this yeast in beers, and it sounds like this is what... Well, if you're go astray enough to get a citrusy flavored beer, I don't understand you. But it might be because of this Norwegian yeast.
Exactly, and they're calling it like the darling of the sort of the craft beer industry. You know, these things go in waves, and the current wave is this particular one because it makes a fruitier beer. It brews faster. It ferments faster. Apparently, all the brewers are loving it, and it's the hot thing right now.
You know, Seamus, I'm sorry, I've already forgotten. How do you pronounce it?
Quike.
Thank you very much for that. Okay, and so they make this yeast just like they're brewing beer. I had never thought of this either.
Right. It looks like the factory looks like a craft beer place. You know, with all the stainless steel brewers there. But you know, but the real, you look closer, and you know that they've got the test tubes out and the Bunsen burners and the beakers and all that. And it's quite an operation. They've got 200 different strains of yeast. Who had any idea? I can't pronounce any of the other ones.
You should have never told me that. Okay, so Quike Fest is this weekend. Do you know where it is again?
It's at the District Brew Yards near west side, over by, it's not far from the Goose Island and from Ontour Brewery.
Okay, so while you're here, though, I want to ask you about another story. So school started for Chicago Public Schools this week. Common, the rapper, opened up his own school, an art school, on the south side, right? Now, is this a charter school, so is it part of CPS?
It is, but it's a charter school, so they're getting that funding. But they're also getting funding from a Southside church. New Life Covenant Church is the main funder of this.
And this is on East End Avenue, 7400 block south. It's for kids who want to focus on the arts, or they're sort of phasing it in, right?
Right. This is exactly. They're starting with the inaugural class of seventh and eighth graders, and each year, as those kids move up, they'll backfill another seventh class until it's a full fledged high school. Right. They'll go 7 through 12.
You know, I'm not putting this down by any means, but I it seems to me like there are other celebrities getting involved the way Common is too. Sort of the way celebrities used to open up restaurants, they're opening up schools, which is much better for us if they work out.
Right, yeah. You know, back in the day, it could have been like the Mike Ditka school.
Right, the Jim McMahon. I don't know if the Jim McMahon school would have worked for us. I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, but this is cool. Because Common says, you know, he's really active in it. And he said, you know, imagine, you know, you get this world-class photographer or world-class director or composer that comes in and talks directly to the kids and connects. And he's like, and I'm going to be the one making those calls, you know, sort of, to getting these people to show up.
And Common is certainly a force. So I wish them the best of luck down there.
Yeah, it's called Art in Motion.
All right, Seamus Toomey, the chief editor-in-chief of Block Club Chicago, thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
And I'll see you at the fest this weekend.
That's right. Quike.
It's the Business Lunch, the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. If you are a regular on the Red Line and pass by the Sheridan L stop, you might be familiar with a four-story apartment building that has been under construction for a long time. It took 2 years for this apartment building on Irving Park Road to be built, but it never had residents and it was never finished. Cranes released the story of this building switching possessions a number of times, deadlines being missed, miscommunications happening, and a number of other factors that proves construction in the city can be quite strong. stressful. Maybe if they just keep throwing money at it, I'm sure it'll get fixed. And Chicago's healthcare world is looking for a fix itself. A number of Illinois hospitals are having to close their obstetrics unit because there are just too few babies that are being born. Amita Health St. Francis Hospital Evanston closed 18 beds. Jackson Park just closed 17. Amita Health Advent Medical Center in LaGrange just got rid of 12 beds. Doctor, what are we gonna do? Somebody has to tell these millennials to stop Instagramming around the world and have these babies. Okay, turn the drama down. I'm Bennett Wake Knight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thank you, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. On the phone line now is Frank Sennett from Crane Chicago Business. Frank, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thank you. And it just every, you know, week or so, I think, I can't believe that we get to share the air with Orion.
I know. Isn't that nice?
Living legend.
I know. It's well, you are too, Frank. It's just not in the same circles. So I'm reading this story by Dalton Baker in Cranes about McDonald's and their chicken sandwiches. And listen, if I ever order a chicken sandwich at McDonald's, it's sort of because I'm punishing myself or trying to show discipline by not ordering something else, right? It's never my go-to.
Right.
And there have been riots over the chicken sandwiches at Popeyes recently. Have you had one yet?
I have not. It's so funny. The one on Wabash near my office closed with Gold Coast Dogs, and they moved into a nicer location across the street. And I stopped in right before the craze started and thought, hey, this is a nice joint. I'll have to stop back. And then I've been avoiding the crowds ever since.
Have you seen that really have been crowds, I guess, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. So they're doing well. Chick-fil-A, we had a former marketing executive on from Chick-fil-A a few months ago. Of course, they're gangbusters, especially in the South. And then there's McDonald's, which kind of tries to be everything to everybody, and they're really lagging when it comes to the chicken sandwich market.
Yeah, and it's funny. As you say, Steve, it's not the first thing you think of, chicken, when you think of McDonald's.
It's not the fourth thing I think of.
No, and I was in a McDonald's in La Porte, Indiana on Labor Day coming back from Indiana, and they were out of Coca-Cola. And I thought, you know, a McDonald's out of beef or out of Coca-Cola is not really a McDonald's. If they were out of chicken, no big deal. So they're right. Really playing catch-up. You know, Chick-fil-A is now a close competitor, and, of course, we're seeing what happens at Popeyes. But, you know, the chicken sandwiches, to be – you know, honest, that McDonald's are more of an afterthought for most of us. And so the whole thought is, can they compete?
I love the piece where they talk about where they tried to do a more premium chicken sandwich that, you know, right now the chicken sandwich comes pre-breaded, frozen, and you throw it in the deep fryer, I guess. But
right.
They tried to do a classier one that would require the restaurants to bread them as they're ordered. And that increased the delivery time from a minute after ordering to 7 minutes for this premium. And that just takes too much time when you're talking about McDonald's.
That's right. And also the taste test by the franchisees, they were not that impressed with the quality of flavor. So they said, you know, the menu experience team is what it's called there. They've been testing different flavor profiles, flash frying, pressure cooking. I mean, they're literally throwing everything but the kitchen sink against, like, the new Manhattan Project to come up with a great chicken sandwich for McDonald's.
And so they've got some things they're going to unveil. But I'm sorry, if you call something a spicy chicken sandwich, it doesn't appeal to me.
Yeah, I think they need a little marketing help with that as well as apparently some flavor help. But as you know, I'm a mainstay. I'm an old-fashioned McDonald's guy, so I'm rooting for them.
Okay, so what about this idea, though? And I know that it's not logical. You couldn't say, okay, we'll just give up on the chicken sandwich, just tread water, because you're a burger joint. I mean, but the fact is that you, unlike Popeyes or unlike Chick-fil-A, you're going to be able to satisfy more than one person in a car if not everyone wants a chicken.
That's right. And that's the good thing with my two kids. That's the one place they'll both go.
Right. How's that for marketing? You'll satisfy more than two people in a car.
I love that, actually. That's a good ad campaign.
Okay, and so one more. PepsiCo, you were mentioning Coca-Cola. PepsiCo looks like is going to be the latest giant company, now to move into the old post office.
I mean, what a story this is. You know, it was populated by bats and who knows what else a few years ago.
Decades.
And after all this money that's been sunk into it, the old post office is like the destination.
And so why is it that they weren't able to do it for so long? I mean, is it the fact that just the business climate has caught up to the vacant building? I don't quite get that.
I think it's three things. I think it's that, and I think it was financing, you know, getting the right financing in place, because there were a couple times that it looked like it was getting off the ground and it fell through. The business climate improving obviously helps that. And then probably just, you know, public-private focus, you know, the government helping to grease the skids, like, let's not let this resource just become dilapidated. So, you know, the alchemy is paid off. They got 2.5 million square feet to lease, but they're almost halfway there. They get 200,000 square feet potentially from PepsiCo with Quaker Oats, Tropicana, and Gatorade. Moving from elsewhere in the loop on Monroe,
right.
And then you know, this huge thing from Uber. They've just got a lot of momentum, and that's actually raising the appeal of the West Loop in general. Well, a lot of money, like, the West Loop is the new loop when it comes to office.
Yeah, it's going to become a destination. I mean, it's going to become a city in itself, I think.
And it's already very hard to drive around in, so I hope there's a lot of, but, you know, that's where all the trains go, so it's commuter friendly.
Check out more at chicagobusiness.com, and check out the Daily Gist podcast as well from Amy Guth a little later today. Frank, good to talk to you.
Thanks, Steve.